Hello and welcome to episode 5 of the Attended Exchange podcast. Today I'm thrilled to be joined by Bertie Russell, Managing Director of Russell Simpson Estate Agents. Bertie's father, Alan, set up the agency 45 years ago in 1979, and Bertie, along with many of his family members, now run and operate Russell Simpson, highly, highly regarded estate agency in central London. So Bertie and I talk about his early years, family life, professional career, plans for the future. We talk about COVID. We talk about all sorts of different things. So if you're interested in property, you're interested in estate agency, then enjoy the next hour or so listening to Bertie's words of wisdom. Enjoy. Okay, today I'm delighted to be joined by Bertie Russell, Managing Director of Russell Simpson, one of London's most highly regarded estate agents. So thank you for joining us today, Bertie.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Let's start right at the beginning. What was young Bertie like?
I am the eldest of 6 children, and I was still 3 when the 4th sibling came along. So young Bertie was, and still is, classic first child. Nervous and anxious all the time, thinker. And I think I think what defined me as a younger kid was just being the eldest sibling of so many siblings.
So you've got 4 brothers and a sister?
4 brothers and a sister. And I'm sure we'll come on to it, but I work with 4 of them. We had an amazing childhood with 6 kids. It was just constant activity, sports, messing around.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah.
And mum and dad both worked in the business. They were there a lot. Had an amazing, amazing childhood with all of my siblings.
Super. Okay. And when and how was Russell Simpson conceived? I know that obviously in your logo it dates back to 1979.
Yeah.
So you just had a big milestone.
Yeah, 45 years this year. So my dad, Alan, started it 45 years ago. And he was at Aylesford before for 5 years. Andrew Langton, who is the owner of Aylesford, is actually one of my brother's godfathers.
Okay.
And they became really close friends off the back of the first 5 years. And after 5 years, him and one of his colleagues, Lynn Simpson, decided to set the business up.
Okay.
Which actually a lot of people don't know. They don't know the reason why we've got a Simpson in there, but she started it with him. And I think 3 years after they founded it, she left and went on to do something else.
It's still in property, Lynn, or did she go off and completely change?
So they were actually, weirdly, they were selling some properties out in the Caribbean.
Oh, were they?
And she was really, she quite liked that lifestyle. And she was quite keen on getting my dad to move out there and sell properties out there. And he decided that just wasn't for him. So he let her go off and do that. And he bought her out, and
the rest is history.
The rest is history, yeah.
Yeah, okay, great. And when did you decide to join the family business?
So I've been there 16 years.
Okay.
And did you know
from quite a young age that you wanted to potentially join the firm?
I never knew what I wanted to do,
okay.
Which I think is probably quite similar to a lot of people. But there was never any pressure to join the business. I worked there gap year, holidays.
And I guess you were living, eating and breathing it from a very young age anyway, just from mum and dad and, you know, the nature of the work that we do.
Yeah, I didn't know that at the time, but yeah, every dinner, every lunch, every breakfast, there was talk of it. Mum and dad would come home and do bath time, and then they'd go back to the office till midnight.
Wow.
And we'd sit up waiting for them, writing them letters and, you know, flying little paper airplanes down the down to sort of get their attention. I left uni in 2008, 2 months before Lehman Brothers crashed.
Wow.
And I went into Russell Simpson the day after I left uni. And
time to join.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing because the first week I went to a completion with Dad at a £10 million house, £14 million house. And 2 months later, that house could have been bought for 4 or 5 million. And it was dramatic.
Yeah, well,
and,
yeah.
You know, I'd left 3 years of uni and I'd had, you know, I did history of art, which I really enjoyed, but I was mainly having a lot of fun. And the contrast of fun, you know, fun life at uni to the black cloud that was over us at that point was quite intense.
Quite drastic, yeah. Yeah.
So that was it. It was an interesting first year.
Baptism of fire.
It was.
Yeah. And is your dad still working in the firm? Still working the business?
Yeah, he's he is still there. We try and convince him to take it a little bit easy on a Friday, but he refuses. So in theory, he's not in the office on Fridays, but he lives and breathes it. He's done 50 years as an estate agent this year, and he
still loves it.
He loves it.
Yeah.
And he every weekend, every minute, he hasn't taken a day off.
Brilliant. Good. Russell Simpson purposely don't have any shop fronts. Mm. How does that sort of fit into your, your brand's ethos?
It was all completely by accident. And it wasn't by accident. Dad worked at Aylesford, and he felt that having a shop front there, most of the people that came in from the street were people looking for change or the loo or directions.
Right.
And you'll be able to tell me if that's right or wrong. But because of that, when he set up his business, he decided not to have a shop front, which back in 1979 was pretty bold.
Mm.
But actually, I think back then it was a lot of word of mouth. There was a lot of relationships. They didn't have mobile phones or computers at that point, so it was very much meeting people on the street and calling them on their landline.
Yeah.
I think in the last 10 years, I think it's been beneficial to us not having one, with the digital era changing and everything being so available online.
Mm.
I don't think it's necessarily badly affected us. I think if we were starting afresh today in the areas that we currently cover, would it be beneficial to have a shop front? Probably. Get your name out there, be more visible on the high street.
Yeah.
I think for our brand, it's evolved over 45 years, and I think over the last 3 or 4 years we've done a lot more work on the brand and what we stand for and what people think of us, why people like us, why people want to use us. And I think the family element, the sort of discreet element, those things,
it really ties into not having a shop front with
it
discretion.
Ties into that. Yeah.
Yeah. And under the radar,
and the higher value stuff is, we do quite a lot of higher value trades on sales and lets, I don't know whether people like it or not, but it seems to be working so far.
Yeah, I think with the British culture, it works well, doesn't it, for not to be too shouty. Not for every client. But for certain clients, they just love the fact that, a discreet agent, certainly at the top end, is
really important. I think as the years go by, and we get older, I think for us, we want to go to bed at the end of the night feeling proud of what we've done, and it's aligned to our values and how we want to live our life.
Yeah.
And we're not shouty. That's just not us. I'd feel embarrassed about that, and I'd feel it wouldn't align with my values, or our values. So I think it's, that's why it sort of, I don't know, just continues to.
And how have you found the industry sort of evolve in your time?
It leads very well on from that. In my time, London Magazine was the key area for new inquiries, 16 years ago. So yeah. we'd put a whole load of things in the London Magazine. They'd be posted around all the local areas, and we'd get most of our inquiries from that. When Leo arrived 12 years ago, he couldn't believe that we had never, Rightmove wasn't as dominant as it had been before. And I remember probably 3 years into my time, we put a house on for 22 million, and we had 5 inquiries from Rightmove and Zoopla, whoever it was, Prime Location.
Yeah.
And one of them bought it. And for me, that was just the most mind-boggling thing. and when I told him that story, he couldn't believe it. So I think the change in the digital obviously has made a massive difference. I think
And you've really embraced that. You sort of rebranded, how many years ago now?
Well, only 2 years ago,
2 years ago.
Yeah.
But your website, your branding collateral, it is, it's incredible.
Thank you.
Yeah, it really is up there. Did you use a branding agency?
We used a branding agency, and then we used a web designer. And
okay.
They worked independently, but the web designer slightly tweaked the branding to suit the website.
How many times has the branding gone through sort of rebirth in the 45 years?
Once.
Just literally once. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so that was the first rebrand in 43 years.
Wow. Okay.
And my dad's still
if it ain't broke.
If it ain't broke. But my dad's still not happy about us losing the Burgundy. Yeah, it was weird. I mean, I think there's a lot of, you know, learning as you go along. I mean, none of us did business degrees. We all studied art, history of art at uni. We've come into it and learned as we've gone along.
But you've got Obi-Wan as a father. Around the
we've got
table.
Obi-Wan as a father. So that was a huge benefit. And I think that...
Was mum involved in the business? She was obviously busy raising six kids. But
Dad sold my grandfather and grandmother a house. And then he sold my aunt a house. And then he sold my mum a house. And that's how they met.
Oh, wow.
And that was probably 10 years into... Probably about 8 years into him starting.
Right.
And quite soon after, they got married.
Was mum working when she met dad? Or was she...
She was... I think she was a speech and language...
Okay.
...specialist. What was she working? She was working for Nutella at one point. You know those little... I don't know if you remember this, but you know the little lids on Nutella lids? And you used to pop them out and there was a little thing underneath.
Yeah.
So she came up with that idea while she was working in Sydney. That's her claim to fame.
Brilliant.
But she's super hardworking and very dynamic. And she set up our lettings department.
Oh, did she?
Okay. About 10 years after we... About sort of 89. And she... Leo, again, number four, he was in a bassinet under the desk at day three.
Wow.
And yeah, they worked super hard. I mean, I think when she had the sixth kid, she stopped working. We moved to the countryside. It just wasn't big enough to... We needed more space.
Yeah, the mind literally just boggles. I mean, Simon and I set Wilford's up 13 years ago, and neither of us were married at the time, and neither of us had children. Simon's got three children, like your good self, and I've got one daughter. But the thought of running a business with six young children, I mean, wow.
Yeah, with three, with any kids, it's stressful. I still quite don't know how they did it. They are ridiculously hardworking.
Yeah, they must be, yeah.
They've just had their head down just...
Yeah, and the fact that dad's still there at the coalface, you know, working hard.
He just loves it. I mean, my worry with him is, you know, what would he do without it? Like he's so valuable to the business and he loves it. And, you know, it's what he's done for 50 years.
My father has sold furniture, beds predominantly, all of his life. And he retired when he was in his 60s. And I think he's a bit remorseful now that he didn't carry on working just two or three days a week.
What was his?
He worked for the same company called Relyon for, I think, 25 years. Yeah. And then when he reached his 50s, he jumped across to work for a couple of other bed manufacturers. And one of them didn't look after him very well. And they kind of took his book of 25 years and then essentially got rid of him. And I think that was a tough knock for him in his mid-50s, when you're sort of coming towards the end of your career. And then... I think he just wishes he'd remained an agent, you know, a sales agent for two or three days a week. If he could wind the clock back, I'm pretty sure.
He
just loves sport, all things sport. Really? So he's just passionate about anything. He'll watch anything.
And playing as well?
As a younger man, he was a really good squash player and a good footballer.
Really?
But now he's just driving my mum mad.
challenge of retirement.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. A few years ago now, you sort of jumped across from the Chelsea offering over to Kensington. How have you found the sort of clients? Do they differ at all?
They're so different. Yeah, they're so different. Our Chelsea office, we were covering the whole area. So we were covering up into Kensington, not as much, a little bit into Notting Hill, but not that much. And we just got too busy. Driving up and back, so that's why we started the new office. And the new office is to cover Kensington, Notting Hill, Holland Park, Bayswater, and it's dramatically different. I mean, just the dress code's hugely different. Mm. It's probably more relaxed, or at least it was when I did this 6 years ago. I don't know if it's still the same or not. And it's a weird thing it's not discussed in the office or amongst colleagues, or even, I mean, I don't even think I've ever spoken to an agent about this. Weirdly, I spoke to my sister about this the other day, but when I moved up with my sister-in-law to open the office, we noticed a huge change in just the attitudes and the It was just more informal.
Probably the biggest change. Notting Hill's are much more sort of informal. Yeah, like you say, the dress code, lots of people there sort of working in, I don't know, the tech industries. Obviously still lots of people working in finance. But it is a very, you know, 2 miles away, a mile away, not even that. And it's,
sold a house. I couldn't believe it. After about 9 months in, we took on quite a big house and the eventual buyer turned up and he was on a scooter, like a little, his kid's scooter that he'd you know, ridden from dropping him off at school in shorts and a t-shirt. And he came in and bought this house for over 20 million. And I just thought, never seen anything like this before. And you know, the typical experience in Belgravia is, you know, driver drops this super swanky, usually man off in a incredibly expensive suit smoking a cigar.
Yeah.
And that's the, you know, that's the one end of the spectrum stereotype, but it is definitely smarter and
Yeah. Jumping across now to your private life, we talked about how your mum and dad met. How did you meet your wife?
My wife and I met in Leeds, at Leeds University.
Oh, did you? It's
a great city. We had a great time there. And we met probably at 18. I was 19, she was 18. We were both dating other people at that time in the first year. And second year, we got put together by the guy that ended up being my best man and the girl who ended up being one of my wife's best friends. And they are now married and we're now married. And the bizarre thing about it was our surnames are both Russell before we met.
Wow.
And we grew up 10 minutes apart.
Did
in
you
Oxfordshire.
Really?
Yeah. And we're not related. So we, yeah.
That's
incredible. I think with the same surname and then figuring out we live next to each other at home, we got on because of that. And she's very sporty, outgoing, hugely extroverted person, which I am not.
Yin to your yang.
She is exactly my yin to my yang.
Yeah.
So we've been together for nearly 20 years now.
Well, that's lovely. You don't see, because in this day and age, there's not that many people. I think when our parents, or certainly when my parents, you know, got married, their generation, it was very much, you know, school, uni. By the time they were 20, certainly by the time they were sort of early 20s, married kids.
Yeah.
And I think apart from, you know, Simon Connell and Jules, who also met at university, I believe, I don't know too many people who, you know, met their husband or wife at uni, and yeah, that's a lovely
story.
It
wasn't easy. If she was here, she'd tell you some some difficult first years.
No, I'm sure.
And actually, I think when you meet younger, it almost takes you longer to then end up getting married and having kids. So we ended up taking quite a long time to get married and have kids, and a lot of our, I mean, Jake, my brother, he met his wife Hattie through work.
Okay.
And she now works with us, and they met years after me and Jess met, but they got married and had kids much quicker.
Right.
Yeah, we were just too comfortable and hadn't thought about it. And when I proposed to her, she was like, what, really? I was like, yeah, we're nearly 30. Like, everyone else is doing it. We've been together for 10 years.
Yeah, what are we going to wait for?
Yeah.
And you've got 3 children you mentioned earlier on. How old are the kids?
The eldest one is 5 and a half, nearly 6. Then we've
got
4-year-old and 1 and a half.
Amazing. And what are their personality traits like? What are they...
So the eldest one is exactly like me, eldest child syndrome, but he's clever. he's thankfully got some intelligent genes from the other side of the other side. I think he's going to be quite bright. He's fat. Yesterday I played chess with him in the evening and in the morning. He's obsessed with games and numbers. We'll see if that continues. Quite anxious. Properly eldest child, loves looking after the younger siblings, looks exactly like my father-in-law, so has the looks from my wife's side, and I think more like me internally. The second one is looks like me but is like my wife, complete showman. You think he's gonna be an actor. looks like me. And then the youngest one is she's 18 months, so she's got characters really starting to come out. Such a sweet age.
She's
sort of running around, stumbling around and saying her first few words. And yeah, it's a challenging time, but it's an amazing time.
Yeah. And you mentioned just before we sat down in front of the microphones that you have to make a concerted effort to really be present, don't you, when they're little. I mean, our daughter's just turned 11,
really,
and it doesn't seem 5 minutes since she was 18 months old, and really, it goes like that.
Have you got any advice?
No, I think, you know, just what you said when we were chatting before we sat down in front of the cameras, which is, you know, when you are at home, if you can, just try and, just try and be present with them. And try and spend that as much time with them as you can. But it's really challenging doing the job that we do, because obviously clients tend to also get home from their busy job and go, oh, it'll do. I'll reach out to Bertie and just see how we're getting on with the house sale. You know, you can't just go bouncing calls, because, you know, we need to be present. And so trying to be present for clients and family is quite challenging. I think from my point of view, Clementine, me and her mum, we co-parent. So I'm quite lucky in the sense that I sort of have 5 nights per fortnight during term time when I'm with Clemmie.
Yeah.
So I can then very much go, right, this is my time with my daughter. And that's going to take priority, which is every other weekend, and then
for an unexpected every positive.
Yeah, exactly.
But probably, so, I've heard a few people in the same situation, a few friends of mine, and it is, you get real quality time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, the flip side is obviously, you know, we then spend 9 nights together where we're not. But you're right, it's just trying to turn a negative into a positive. Yeah, so yeah. There's definitely positives there. In your professional career, Bertie, what's been your greatest achievement to date?
Still being here. Greatest achievement to date. I think me and my siblings, we feel hugely responsible for keeping my dad's reputation as strong as we found it. It's the thing that we noticed immediately when we met people that knew him and heard some of the feedback that people gave of him. And I think it's weird, I spoke to someone the other day about, they also have sort of taken over their father's business. And, you know, he's in his early 60s now, and he said his father's now died, sadly. He said he's still, that's what drives him every day, is just the responsibility of maintaining his reputation. Mm. And, I think the thing that comes to me the most is the joy I get from working with all of my family. You know, after doing it for 16 years and getting to nearly 40, it's not something I was that aware of in my 20s or early 30s. But now, having my own kids, I realise that having that quality time with my parents and my siblings on a daily basis is really special. And actually, if Dad had a shoe business or a, you know, spoon business, I think we would have been equally happy doing that together.
Yeah.
And I think probably the thing I'm proudest of is being involved in a business where I hope people are proud to work there and happy to work there and enjoy it. Me and my siblings and my dad definitely are proud of it and love everything we do there. So I hope that everyone else is. But that, you know, I've now running the business and we've got about 40 of us there. So there's quite a responsibility.
Significant size. Has it changed much since you joined? So how many people were working there?
So 16 years ago, there were 8 people.
Wow.
And before COVID, we were 14.
So a huge increase, isn't
so
it?
So COVID was a massive...
Yeah.
It was probably the most important time, and definitely in the last 20 years, where we had 3 months of undivided attention to think about the business and how we were... We realised we were all doing 2 or 3 jobs.
That's when I wrote my business plan for our office number 2 during COVID. Because it's just that one time.
Such an important time. When did you have that opportunity?
Yeah, the phone didn't ring. It was incredible.
It was
the only time ever in 27 years of being a real estate agent where, apart from Christmas maybe,
that's interesting. Then you need that time to relax.
And you do. Yeah, yeah. Well, may I say, you're doing an amazing job at looking after the brand on behalf of your dad, because, you know, you guys have got a phenomenal reputation within the industry, second to none.
I think fear is probably a good motivator. You know, I don't think there'll ever be a moment where we're finished or we're... Yeah, it's not ours. You know, we've adopted this thing, and we're really carefully trying to look after it. So I don't think we'll ever be finished.
Who do you perceive to be your biggest competitor, and what do you admire about their work?
We try desperately not to look at anyone apart from ourselves, really. Our biggest competitor, I think we have different competitors in different areas of the market where we work. I think at the upper end of the sales and lettings parts of what we do, it tends to be Knight Frank, Savills, Struts, Sotheby's have come in recently.
Deep pockets.
Deep pockets and different business model, which is really interesting. So I think they're probably our biggest competition on at that end of the market. But there's also so much collaboration that happens, which I know is another question, so I'm sort of jumping there early. But it's such a big part of the upper end of the market that they're our competition, but they're also our friends. And they're people that we do a lot of business with and we have a lot of trust and respect for. Again, you know, at different ends of the market, you know, someone like John D. Wood and Chelsea Green, they're just an absolute powerhouse and they've been there for years. So they're big competitors for us in Chelsea.
But you'll also do a joint agency with them and collaborate with them, of course.
But we're just trying to focus on doing the best job we can, and we feel confident that if we do that, then it'll keep going.
Good. Okay. Best advice that you've received along the way so far?
That was a question that I didn't know how to answer.
I was thinking maybe something from Dad.
Well, the first thing, I mean, the greatest thing Dad has done for us is, and for me, in my sort of management style or the stuff I've learned about, particularly managing people or clients, particularly people internally, you know, he's given a lot of, he's a very generous man, and he's a hugely trusting person. He doesn't look over your shoulder, doesn't micromanage at all. And the first thing he gave me a desk and a box of cards and a phone and a car. And he was like,
go. Old school.
He was old school. Yeah. And I actually figure it out for yourself. I think that is a very difficult thing to do when you manage people or you employ people, but it's a really important thing to be able to allow people that leeway to go and make their own mistakes and figure out their own way of doing things. I think that sort of nature, that's the sort of values that he has, are the things that I've probably taken the most out of.
Yeah, no, good answer. This podcast is called the Attended Exchange Podcast. Have you experienced many attended exchanges in your career so far?
They seem to come and go on where the market is. So at the moment, probably less so. But we've experienced a fair number. Probably the most amusing one for me is the one my dad was involved with, that he showed a lady a house in Glebe Place, and she was in the house and said, I want to buy it now, how can I do it right now? And he said, okay, get in my car. Got in the car, they called her lawyer, they went to his office, collected him, and they drove to the seller's lawyer, and they bought it in about an hour.
All
of them were physically in person.
What kind of year was this, do we think?
It was probably about that was probably about 15 years ago.
Okay.
We have quite a few since, but that was the one that stands out in my mind.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, we're just going to take a quick break and then we'll be back for part two shortly. We all have numerous obstacles and challenges in life. What's been your biggest obstacle and how have you overcome the hurdle? Nice light question for you.
Light question, yeah. We could go for 2 hours on this if you want. biggest challenge. You reached out to me a while back about this, but I think one of the greatest thing that I've struggled with is finding balance between probably two things. So one is finding balance between work and family life and life outside of work. I find it so difficult. And I think before I had kids, my answer to balance or time constraints was get up earlier, go to bed later. And before I had my first kid, when we were pregnant with Albie, I was getting up at 4 o'clock with my wife. We'd be doing exercise for an hour and a half, and then we'd go into work at 6:30, and you get 2 hours of work done before, and then you work till 8 p.m. again. Mm. And that seemed to be a sensible solution to my problem. as my wife was pregnant, I was like, how is this going to continue to work with a newborn, less sleep, and basically another job. I think I've spoken to you about this before, but I've been seeing a therapist, business coach for the last 3.5 years, and I've been really trying to figure out how to find balance between those two things and find enjoyment out of both of them and be present in both of them and not let either one of them ruin the other, but still achieve what I want to achieve as a dad and a husband and as a business person and a colleague. And so that's as an, in a nutshell, has been the greatest, probably the greatest challenge for me. And it's definitely the most current challenge. And it's, yeah, I mean, seeing this therapist, I mean, he's, you know, I call him a therapist business coach. He's had history of business coaching and he has helped me with business coaching and leadership and things like that. But really, therapy is the thing I've been doing most with him. And it's been completely transformational.
Has it really? Okay. It's, and that's like an hour a week.
It's an hour a week. I did about 2.5 to 3 years of an hour a week, which is intense and a lot. And actually, in the last 6 months, we've now moved it to once a month.
Okay.
And yeah, it was just extraordinary. I mean, it gives you an hour a week to, like we were talking about with COVID, you know, COVID is the only time you've had and we've had, you know, you've in 27 years and me in 16 years to sit with your thoughts and reflect on.
To just stop. Yeah. And think. Yeah.
And that was for a business, you know, positive things came out of that for both of us in terms of business.
Yeah.
We thought had time to think about our business and
strategize
yeah. and formulate a plan and reflect on what's happened in the past and things that went well and things that went less well and how we can improve them. And basically therapy.
So this is your window to do that on a monthly, weekly, now monthly basis. Yeah. Okay.
So I basically have had COVID for an hour every week for 3.5 years.
Yeah, great.
But selfishly for myself.
Yeah.
And I was very bad at, and still am very bad at giving time to myself.
Yeah. My sister's a therapist. She retrained as a therapist once her children, my niece and nephew, sort of grew up, essentially. And all of a sudden, you know, the kids are now, you know, teenagers and spending lots of time with their mates and they don't need her around as much.
Yeah.
So she retrained as a therapist. And I've had therapy a few times in my life. And I initially felt that it was quite self-indulgent, just sitting there chatting about me.
It's like, really weird.
Really weird.
At the beginning,
but,
really
but
weird.
But so, so fruitful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, thanks for that.
I couldn't recommend it more highly to
everybody.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Following on from last week's budget, for the first time, inherited pensions will be brought under the inheritance tax regime from March, April 2027. Do you think this will have any impact on our market?
I think that I don't know that much about, I mean, I'm putting money into a pension, but I don't know that much about it in terms of how you can use it. I understand that you can use your pension to invest in commercial property.
Yeah, you can. That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
But actually getting that money out and putting it into residential property, unless you're a certain age, is probably quite tricky. I mean, if you were to have £1 million in your pension and you were able to take all of it out and then put it into property, you'd still have inheritance tax on the property you might leave to your kids or to whoever you leave it to. Are people going to stop putting money in because of the inheritance tax clause? Again, if they put it into property, there's still inheritance tax on it.
Yeah.
There are so few windows of opportunity for inheritance tax savings now.
That was the last one closed, I think.
Yeah, well, there's still, I mean, the big one that's actually impacted us as a business, which is that there was business property relief. So the idea with us is that if we were to inherit Russell Simpson from my dad, then there would be no tax on the value of the company at that stage. Whereas they've changed that.
20% now.
20%.
Yeah.
So for us, you know, and for us, we'll figure that out and we'll manage it. I feel incredibly sorry for the farmers who have been tackled with that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're not in a bad situation compared to a lot of other people, but that's another window of another area of tax-free inheritance tax that they're closing up. It's better than 40%, but it's still 20%.
Mm.
I mean, people are going to have to put money aside to live when they retire, and it's a good way of putting money away without paying tax on it when you put it in.
Yeah, it's definitely still beneficial.
And you've got your ISA. That's, you know, you have to pay inheritance tax on that, pension. I mean, I could speak for 2 hours about personal finance if you want. I love personal finance.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I feel with tax, like, if people make, if we or people make a profit, or there is excess money at the end, it's a really luxurious, privileged place to be. And I think that the government have had a really difficult task to handle. And whether they've put the right taxes in place will be shown in the future. But yeah. But I think for the masses, you know, do they really care about second homes being taxed another 2%? I mean, we do hugely.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah. For the general public, yeah, they probably don't really care.
No, of
course. Do they really care about the non-doms? Probably not. I mean, no. We hugely care about those. Yeah. I think for the economy, I think, you know, we need to stimulate growth. And we haven't seen much growth in the UK for quite a long time. So my worry about what they've done is they're not necessarily stimulating growth with the taxes that they've put on, and they're disincentivizing international people and bright business people to want to set up their businesses and live here. And I think that's probably the biggest implication that's going to have. You know, non-doms and all the other taxes that are put in place are going to disincentivize bright international people to set up and call London their home. And I hope that won't be the case, because I think we've still got so much to offer here. Such brilliant schools, super safe environment legally and, you know, crime-wise. Mm. Only time will tell.
Yeah.
I think taxing the pensions, I don't necessarily see a massive impact, but do you?
No.
You must do.
I don't know is the honest answer. I think your overview there was brilliant, and it'll be interesting to see how Rachel Reeves and Keir Starmer's plans play out over the next, well, over this term. And I guess, you know, Labour governments, property in London has always done well historically under a Labour government. Yeah. And I think that this first sort of maiden budget from Rachel Reeves is hopefully going to be the sort of hardest for us all to take on the chin. And then as each year ticks by, hopefully she'll sort of, you know, make it a little bit easier for everybody. But, you know, time will tell.
Did you know, this is quite off topic, but did you know in the 70s that that Silicon Valley were under massive pressure because the Hong Kong sort of Japanese Asian markets were completely dominating them? Right. And all of the chip makers and the computer makers, they were all going to the government and asking them for subsidies and help to compete against the Asian markets. And they were completely on their knees. And the only reason they managed to get their way out of it is entrepreneurs and people thinking about new things and looking for growth. And I think that, you know, and we obviously, they're absolutely dominant now.
Mm.
And I just think that I really, really want there to be a sort of, I want this to be a positive place for growth and excitement and challenging challenges and, you know, new
ideas,
things to
yeah,
come
entrepreneurs,
out.
Entrepreneurs, yeah.
And I think that, you know, we are in a, I think there are some great entrepreneurs here, and I just want them to be. I want the government to support that and support new, interesting people doing interesting things that will help grow the economy and yeah. grow exciting, you know, exciting industries for people to work in.
Yeah, yeah. Time will tell. On a slightly brighter note, it's me. My questions. Where's home for you and your wife and your family?
So we spent 15 years in London. And last,
whereabouts in London?
We moved 11 times.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, crazy. Oh. It was crazy.
Classic agent.
Classic agent. Yeah, we bought and sold quite a lot.
Okay.
Rented in between a few things, but we did a lot of renovation projects, which were quite progressively more stressful the more kids we had.
Sure, yeah. So last London home before you.
Last London home. So I mean, we were from Chelsea, Clapham, Battersea. Back up to Notting Hill, Kensal Rise, Queen's Park.
Okay, all like literally all over.
All over, yeah.
And now you're in?
We're in Oxfordshire.
Okay, lovely part of the world. Yeah,
it's beautiful. And we actually bought my wife's parents' home, which is 10 minutes away from where my mum lives. And we live next to the in-laws. And it's brilliant.
That's great, isn't it?
Absolutely brilliant, yeah. So happy. Lots more space for the kids to run around.
The grandparents there on the doorstep.
Yeah, they love it.
I bet they do. Yeah, that's fantastic.
They have a great relationship with the kids. And yeah, it's
multi-generational living all in one village or town. That's great. And if you had to pick one, just to wrap up, favourite part of London town, really difficult, obviously, doing the job that we do. But if you were to move back, when the kids are grown up and you want to move back and get a pied-à-terre or full-time place back in London, where would you, which London village would you pick?
It's, do you know what? I don't think I would have ever thought this, but if I was to move back after my kids have grown up, I would probably want to move into somewhere like Mayfair, bizarrely. I love Notting Hill. I think as a, I think with kids, to have a big house in the communal gardens would be the dream.
Yeah.
There aren't many other places where you can just open the door and
let
run
them
out.
Run free, yeah.
And the community that comes with that, the other kids and the parents, is really lovely, is what we keep seeing. But yeah,
comes with quite a big price tag though, doesn't it, that one?
Quite a big price tag. So yeah, it's not quite affordable. But neither's Mayfair. But no, I think if I was to move back in, I'd probably want to be closer to the restaurants and the and the theatres and the
everything, all of that stuff.
But yeah, you know, I mean, I grew up as a Chelsea boy till I was 10, and worked in Chelsea for years. So also, I mean, it's a difficult one.
Yeah.
I don't want to be, also got lots of clients, hopefully listening to this. But no, I mean, different reasons, different areas, I think.
Bertie, thank you so much for being so generous with your time.
Pleasure.
And
thanks for having me.
Thank you.